NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.
What's up, Airheads? Welcome back. It's time once again for Putting On Hairs. We're in the I didn't mean to say Putting On Hairs show. It was insensitive of me.
God damn it.
I was trying to say it in a funny way, you know, like I was just trying to say airs in a funny way, but then I accidentally said Putting On Hairs, and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
When you said, oh, I'm sorry, Cho, I made a mistake, I thought you were about to be like, can we take it from the top? And I was gonna be like, hey, it's okay. It's okay to make a mistake. And I was going to be real sympathetic towards you. And I was in that headspace. And then you're like, because you're bald, you fucking piece of shit. Yeah. You still bald?
You're in that bald headspace. I get it. I definitely want to keep all this in. We're in the virtual Airstream studios, about to do another stirring rendition of Putting On Airs. I've got a sort of topic.
Topic. Those are my favorite.
No. I want to just go into, because I know we got some things we're also wanting to talk about, and I might flesh this out a little bit more instead of doing it by the seat of my pants, because I actually think it makes a pretty good topic. I don't want to waste it on half-assery.
Yeah,
so
I hear you.
I'm going to wait. So you, but maybe not. If we run out of things to talk about, I might just go into it. But you're going to do History of Professor Cho, right?
That's right. On the subject of one Coco Chanel.
Hated the Jews, right?
God damn it. Yes, and I'll get to it later, but like I was really hoping that for some reason you just didn't know. Cause like, you know, we've all got gaps in our knowledge, and there's certain things that you don't know. And like, I'm, you know, say what you will, like, this is not to be offensive, but it's true. You're a smarter person than me, but I tend to know more about history. Cause like, I'm super fucking interested in it. And I was really hoping, I was like, I hope Trey don't know about this fucking Jew hating shit. Because I did my notes in such a way that I was going to call this, the duality of Coco Chanel or A Tale of Two Titties. And I was I had it broken down, and I wanted to fucking swerve you. You know what I mean? Like, I had the whole front thing loaded to get to the middle and be like, by the way, hated the Jews.
Yeah, I pooped all over that.
No, it's fine.
To be fair,
No, you're fine. It's not your fault.
That's one of the only things I even know about Coco Chanel is that she, you know, was a Nazi, basically.
No, dude, it's not your fault. I mean, the whole bit is that you tell me everything you know about the person. I was just hoping against hope. And I almost texted you and said, by the way, if you know that she hates Jews, don't mention it. But then I realized what our fans deserve is authenticity. So I just had to roll the dice.
Did you watch the last Bill Burr special at Red Rocks?
Not yet. No, it's on my list of stand-up specials that I need to watch and haven't. I still haven't watched Mulaney's either. This baby shit, man. You know, I'm just like babied out and doing stuff.
Yeah, baby stuff will do that.
I'm not complaining, by the way.
Anyway, on the Burr special, he's got a little chunk in there about Coco Chanel, and it's all and it's all about how big of a bitch she was or whatever, you know. Pretty much, it's like it like you said, the duality of somebody like that. As I recall, I've only seen the special once, and I don't remember the specifics, but I know he talks about Coco Chanel, and you know, the Jew hating comes up as it often do when it comes to her. But
she's got one reason that I'm like, okay, I get why you hate that Jew, and I'll get to that. But you know what I mean? But like, not the whole race. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that one of the most like proudly racist rednecks that I went to high school with, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a wild thing to be.
Uh-huh.
Because most people are like, no, I'm not racist. And then
they say they're not. Yeah.
But then there's some people like, nope, I am.
Yeah, they don't hit. Yeah, right. Yeah. That's that guy. Look, dude, we had at least a handful of those dudes.
Right.
A couple of them got the shit beat out of them by the black kids in school, which hit.
Probably didn't help.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I mean, they, you know.
Yeah, they deserved it.
Had it coming. But anyway. But one of them, I don't know what Coco Chanel's rationale was, but I remember, like, I was kind of like, he said something like particularly racist one day or something, and I kind of like fired back at him, telling him that was fucked up or whatever else. And he like got all pissed off because he said that his daddy had left his mama for a black woman, only he ain't say black woman, but that had happened. And so that was his, like, you know, and it's like you just said, it's like, well, you know, you could think she's a homewrecker and that she don't hit, but that don't justify hating the entire race.
Yeah, because like it goes the opposite on like the liberal side, because I feel like there for a while, it was like if you're an ally of the LGBTQ community, that means that even when a gay person is a piece of shit, you kind of have to like pretend that they're not or something. You know what I mean?
Well, we do. So there's another thing. The other classic example with liberalism is, I was just talking about this on my Patreon, actually, is Islam. Not allowed. And it's always pissed me off because it's like I'm well known for being a godless heathen. I don't I don't court with any lords at all. And that includes fucking Allah, you know.
Yeah, right.
Allah don't hit for me any more than Jehovah or Yahweh or any of these other motherfuckers, any of these fake lords. But like,
can't say that.
You can't really say that. Or, I mean, I still do, and I haven't really gotten
but you have to give the caveat
shit for it. But I do give the caveat or whatever. But yeah, you can't say that because that's like that's xenophobic and racist, whatever. And it's like, no. That shit is crazy. It doesn't make any more, you know, it don't hit. That type of like hardcore religious fundamentalism, I don't care what the religion is, it don't hit. It ain't got nothing to do with them being brown or living over there.
I was about to say, people need to understand that Muslim is not a synonym for brown people. You know what I mean? Because that's what, but you know, that's why a lot of people do hate Muslims. So, you know, with our accent, if you just start saying some stuff like, I don't like any religion, you know, it's bad news, is all I'm saying. Yeah.
But what were the gays? You're like even an what'd you say?
Like I just remember seeing a bunch of stuff. Like this is the early days of internet gay support. You know what I mean? Where like somebody would be shitting on a gay dude
Tumblr.
Who was like. Yeah, somebody would be shitting on a gay dude who was a piece of shit, but everybody wouldn't let him do it because they're like, you're not being a good ally, and like he's got a lot more. And it's like, yeah, but he's a piece of shit.
I have a nuanced question about that to ask you as a comedian.
Okay.
Do you think that – I was just thinking about this today, and I think about – I typically err on the side of, yes, go for it. But like,
Caitlyn Jenner?
Do you think if a person is one of these – protected groups or whatever you want to call it, some sort of minority, but not necessarily racial, just, you know, a marginalized group. They're a member of a marginalized group, right? Which obviously we support and are down with. But if they're a member of one of those groups and they don't hit, right?
Herschel Walker,
Caitlyn Jenner, right?
Yeah.
Madison Cawthorn is one I was thinking about earlier today.
Yeah, disabled.
You know, he's disabled, he's in a wheelchair, right? He also sucks, right? So like, if it's somebody like that, obviously you can go in on them, but can you go in on them in a way that makes jokes about that thing? For example, I reused this in a video I posted right before I got on here. Madison Cawthorn came up, and anytime he comes up, I call him Heil on Wheels, right? and that always hits for people because I feel like
it's funny. It's a good pun.
It's not ableist or whatever, because like he is on wheels. Like I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the fact that he's in a wheelchair. You know what I'm saying? But like he is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, the high part is to get right, but like where you fall on that whole thing, you know what I mean? Because like,
I have a nuanced somebody, answer.
Like Greg Abbott, right? Texas, same thing. It's like I've seen like fans of mine and comments and stuff make some joke about, you know, I swear to God, it's like this motherfucker just don't stand for anything, you know, stuff like that, right? Yeah. Like those kinds of jokes.
Yeah. Okay. Know. Here's where I'm at. First off, Heil on Wheels is totally fine because all you're doing is pointing out that he is in a wheelchair. You never say it's bad that he is. You never say all people in wheelchairs fucking suck. That's totally fine. That's totally fine. And here's the deal. First off, I would like to say this to anybody listening who is like, oh, cancel culture is so bad or whatever. You can do all of it. Like, you say whatever the fuck you want. You know what I mean? Like, there's no official rule book, but here's what this changed my mind on all of this. And it was from friend of the show, Jason Isbell, right? So someone was talking about, somebody had commented on something of his. He was talking about Trump or whatever. And they're like, yeah, you need to talk about the fact that he wears a diaper and fucking shits himself. And Isbell gave a very compassionate response, which was, if I do that, Donald Trump is never going to see it. But you know who will? Someone who has incontinence issues that is a fan of mine. And so by making fun of that thing, I'm making fun of him, but I'm making fun of something that people can't help. And there's so many other things to make fun. So you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think about it like that. Like every time I'm about to say something, I'm like, okay, this person sucks. But how will this person that's also afflicted, because that's what's going to happen. You know what I mean? So, okay,
but keep it going with, and you know, we try to stay away from politics. This isn't I don't know. This is borderline political, I would argue. Like, these are objective things we're pointing
everything's
out.
Everything's borderline
using
political.
Using Trump as a continuing example. He's like, he also fat, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm fine with that. Fuck that.
But I was like, I think it's okay. Well, all right. We can get into that whole fucking can of worms if you want to.
Okay. Sometimes it's choice. I know that there's some people with thyroid issues, but most people that are fat, it's choice. I was one of them. I was one of them.
All I was
going to
say is if you, yes, fat kid from way back. I've yo-yoed my weight my entire life, so I do know something about it.
Did you also used to yo-yo?
Yeah, yo-yos were huge from like 98 to 2001 till 9/11.
It doesn't fit this show.
Like 9/11.
It took all the joy.
Everything out. Like, everybody knows the 90s died on 9/11, right?
Yep, and no more Tamagotchis.
Yo-yos were like a very 90s fad there. Dude, towards the end of it. 9/11 just killed all of it.
That's so fucking true, because like I have for a long time, I've written like a essay about this that I want to base a screenplay on. That's basically the whole point of it is it's called The Last Childhood, and it's about the kids of 9/11, like how we all just kind of stopped being
us?
Kids.
Oh
yeah,
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 okay,
yeah, yeah. We all just kind of, everybody stopped being a kid because it was such a slap in the face, we all woke up to the fact that holy shit, bad things can happen, because the 90s were pretty rad, you know. And so so all the shit that we were into, yo-yos, Tamagotchis, Pogs and shit, like yeah, right after 9/11, we kind of stopped being just having joy all the time. And so those things did get left in the wake, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no. The death of innocence, all that stuff. Things ain't hit since, really.
No, they haven't.
Well, what are you going to do? Kids are still kids, though, which you'll come to find.
They are. The new ones. The new ones, because they weren't here for 9/11. You know,
and as they get a little older, old enough to understand the shit and whatever else, then, you know.
It'll go away.
Yeah.
It'll go away.
Which don't hit. Anyway.
No, it don't hit. That's sad.
The fat thing. You'd have fat fans. If you went after, you made a bunch of fat jokes about Trump, you'd have fat fans being like, come on, we really got to do the fat joke thing or whatever. Yeah. But the reason I would, first of all, I'm with you philosophically on that. But secondly, it's like, it also matters or is relevant, in my opinion, that he
they openly H.
portray
McDonald's.
Him as jacked, right? Yeah, like he, right. they act yeah. as though he's like
Rambo,
shred, like he's Rambo, right? Yeah. He himself thinks he's not fat, acts like he's not fat. I guarantee you, he thinks fats are gross. I guarantee
of course,
it.
Of course,
right? He doesn't believe in exercise. There's so many other reasons why it's like his fatness is relevant to right. like.
He agreed.
Making fun of him or yeah. whatever, right?
So that yeah, a lot of that stuff is very Kim Jong-un-y, you know, the way that they portray yeah. it, all of us can see. We're like, you know, that ain't it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We should probably move on, though.
We should definitely, before the fats come.
So King Charles went to do some king stuff in Scotland, and it was hit for them. Why do they even still keep doing that? Like,
I don't know.
In Scotland,
because,
I mean, because, yeah. They don't know that they don't hit for Scotland because everybody else on Earth knows that.
So what Trey's talking about is King Charles just now got officially coronated in Scotland, right? So, you know, he does his regular coronation, but then like Scotland, which is technically them, even though Scotland very much don't want to be them, as you've pointed out, none of them want to be them, but Scotland has probably been the most vocal about it, or they've been the closest to not being them because so I'm pretty sure that when we were over there, we talked to a dude who was like, there's, you know, Scotland is like getting really close to getting the support from all of their, they're not senators, they're representatives MPs. Or whatever, MPs, to once the EU thing sort of dissolved, they see their moment and they're like, okay, we can leave England. We can diplomatically leave England or whatever. But as it stands, like Scotland is still part of the UK. And yeah, so when he goes over there to get his official coronation there, which if you will remember from one of the episodes, the chair that he got coronated on in England, I believe was stolen from Scotland, but they give it back to Scotland after every coronation, but then they take it again. So I'm assuming he goes and sits on that same seat. And yeah, he was met with boos and jeers, which as we pointed out on the coronation episode, you know, that didn't happen to him when he got coronated in England because he was able to pick everybody that was there. So like everybody in there knew that he hit for them. But I guess in Scotland, that's not the deal.
We were over in Scotland in the run up to the Jubilee, the last, what was it? Diamond, platinum?
Diamond, 75.
75.
That's diamond.
Hell of a run.
That's unreal,
man.
Dude. Hell of a run. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Last one she'd ever see, obviously. In the twilight of Queen Elizabeth's life. It was last, not this most recent May and June, but the May and June before that. We were over there in Scotland, and there was like a bunch of they were not into that either. Like the Jubilee was coming up, and like I remember seeing some like graffiti and stuff. It was like,
fuck
you know,
the queen.
Yeah, fuck the queen, you know. And
shite.
Yeah,
she's full of shite.
Hey, yeah, she kind of, yeah, fuck the old bag who needs her. But they, and they were like, we talked to some people about it, and they were just like, you know, I don't know. You know, Scotland's going to go off on her own before too long. You know, like they were all just saying it as though it was a matter of fact that they wanted nothing to do with the royals, anybody that we talked to. And, but also we were in one Scottish city and there was a contingent of, and I assume they were Scots, but I don't know. Do you remember that little mini parade?
Yes.
That broke out.
Yes.
They were like,
it was lovely.
I say it broke out. They were, I mean, I'm sure they were planning on doing it, but that was, that was a Jubilee thing.
Yeah.
Right. And that was in Scotland. I don't know if those were English people who came to Scotland to do a Jubilee parade thing or if they were like loyalists in Scotland. Yeah. Either way, there was a lot of like, there were a lot of other like Scottish people around when this was going on. They were like booing and jeering and stuff. Like there were a lot of them that were like, this ain't it. The fuck is this shit? But you know, the paraders carried on anyway. So
yeah, and that blew me away at the time because, like, again, I was just buying into the stereotype of like every Scottish person hates the fucking monarchy and hates, you know, England. And of course, like, that can't, we know that that's not true. There's a lot of things that people say all Southerners do and we don't do it. But like, you don't, but all the other ones, you're like, that's 100% fucking true. Until I started reading, you know, more about the Revolutionary War and like the sheer amount of loyalists that there were. And I was like, well, I mean, that has to be a now it's a little bit different over there because we came, like, they didn't, Scotland, was Scotland already a thing? And then they took them over. But I'm saying, like, they were already a thing and they took them over. Like, ours is way different because we were nothing and we came over here as them.
Yes. Right. We didn't start out as us. We started out as them.
Right. You know, like, whereas Scotland started out as them.
And then they was like, y'all us now.
As Scotland. And then they became them, which, like, to me, that's way worse. I'd be pissed.
But too. What's weird, kind of weird about it to me, well, I don't know. I guess it's not that weird. It's just a matter of like regional identity. That island, right? The island of Great Britain, it used to be all these warring clans and factions and stuff. And it was like the precursors to the Welsh and the Scottish and the English. But even in the English part, there was like, it wasn't just one, it wasn't like one group that became. Right. The English, there was like Wessex and fucking York and East Anglia and whatever else. There was like the Angles, Saxons and Jutes and all this shit. And somehow the ones that were in England, when they coalesced into England, they all like, I don't know. They became England. Yep. You know what I'm saying? But they had been different. Groups. Yeah. There was Viking, there was the Norman conquest, the Viking raiders,
and
all
they
these
were fucking them up for a while.
All these different groups that existed in the same country, they like became England.
Yeah.
But there were these other people on the same island the whole time.
Yeah.
The Scottish, the Scots, right?
Yeah.
Who never got down like that. And the Welsh,
they were
too,
just hanging out sheeping and stuff, you know?
I know, but I'm saying I don't know what makes the difference. I don't know why there were some groups that were like, yeah, let's all be England, and everybody was cool with it. And why Scotland, who's on the same island, which is not that big of an island. You know, it's like, especially if you're an American and you're used to this country, like that island is, what is it? It takes like 4 hours. Of course, back then it took a lot longer on a fucking horse or whatever.
Years.
But it's still, it's not that big.
No, it's not big at all.
But well, for whatever reason, the Scottish were all like, you know, yeah, we're not doing all that.
And you know what, man?
So they had to be taken over by force. And that's, and, you know, it's not here for
you know
them
what,
ever since.
Man? Like we talked about while we, and by the way, we were over there. I should bring this up. We were over there to write our new book, which is available for pre-order right now. It's in the description. It's called Around Here and Over Yonder. It's a hillbilly travel guide. We wrote it. It's funny as fuck. And we would love it if y'all would pre-order it and keep us at the, we're number one in rural humor.
Rural life humor. Rural life humor. Which I don't know if that's different than rural humor or not. It's like, but
who knows? Who knows? It is a.
I don't know who we're beating out in rural life humor. But,
I do.
Oh God!
The number two book in rural life. Now I didn't look up what it is, but it's just called Boomer Nation, which checks out. But anyways, you can pre-order that now and help us remain at number one. And yes, these are frequently asked questions. Yes, there is an audiobook. We read it, and you can pre-order that as well. It's at the link in the description, or you can go to treycrowder.com, or you can go to coreyryanforrester.com. We don't care how you get there, long as you get there.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
But anyways, what I was going to say is while we were over there, we started noticing like, oh, it makes so much sense that this is where our people come from. Like, it, you know, we first off, just the train ride, you poke me and you go, dude, we're in fucking East Tennessee right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like, cause the hills and the mountains look just like it. Then also we'd been in England, and I'm not going to say that people in England were mean to us. They weren't. But people in England just didn't give a fuck about us. It was a very New York type thing, just like, don't look at me, whatever. But when we got to Scotland, all of a sudden people started talking to us again. And it was like, I remember when we were going up the escalator on the train, I dropped my bottle, and this dude behind me, and I can't do the Scottish accent like you, but he was like, hey, you know, I dropped your bottle. And he was like, where are you from? And I was like, holy shit, this is Southern hospitality. So I'm saying all this to say this, it makes so much sense that our ancestors were like, we want to be alone and not be a part of this whole fucking federal shit. You know what I mean? Cause like, that's very much a redneck thing. Be left alone.
The first rednecks like literally came, they were, you know, Scots, Irish. They originally literally originated in Scotland and came over there. And you're just saying like, you can see that even now when you go to Scotland, Well, like the people in England, who were perfectly hospitable, but that we also got told multiple times by multiple different people. They were like, you know, oh, you're going to Scotland, are you? I believe you'll find a certain kinship with the Scots. Yeah. And it's funny. And it's funny because like it, like we,
they meant it as an insult.
Right. Well, we didn't say that. We never said that to them, but also we have that like chip on our shoulder that all like Southerners do, but we very much interpreted that as like, it's like, yes, they also are trash and talk like idiots, you know?
Oh yeah.
Have relations with barn animals is all of that. You'll love it. You know, like that's
100%. Me too. I 100% interpreted as them going, you'll love it over there. That's where all the dumb fucks are.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, we did. We loved it.
Absolutely loved it.
It was my favorite part.
Me too, far and away.
There's something else I wanted to circle back to in a previous episode. I mean, hell, it's probably been 3 weeks ago or so now, but
Can I briefly mention this real quick? We don't have to go into it, but if I don't briefly mention it right now, it's going to be dated. Just throwing it out there, but this dude just got charged with attempting to kill the queen back in December because a chatbot told him to murder her with a crossbow, and he somehow snuck in. They talked to him and were like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I'm on AI, and the thing told me to kill the queen with a crossbow, and he's just now being charged. That's all I'll say about that. But the fucking, the simulation and the goddamn, what's the thing when it gets to the end?
Singularity.
The singularity is upon us.
Did they verify that, or is that just something he said?
Well, it's just something he said, but I don't know why you'd make it up.
Because you're a fucking lunatic?
If you're a lunatic, there's no way that a chatbot told him to kill the fucking queen.
That's what I was saying.
That's why
I asked the question, is because, like, there may be, like, 4chan chatbots, like, you know, like shady,
you
know, racist part of the internet chatbots. I'm sure there probably are, but like before long, chatbots are going to be like porn, I'm sure. But like, but that struck me as odd, because if you fuck around with ChatGPT or anything like that at all, like you can't get it It won't say, not that I sit on there trying to make it say, you know,
I do,
trying to trick it into saying the N word or whatever. I don't
do
that.
Oh, I don't do that. Yeah. I had my hand raised still. I had my hand raised still. Fuck you, man.
All I mean is like,
I was Zig Heiling over the fucking, I didn't do that.
I've read articles and stuff about people getting mad because they can't get ChatGPT to say the N word, which is hilarious and so typical of the time we live in. But like, there's no fucking way ChatGPT would ever tell someone to kill the queen or anybody. It's so innocuous by design, like, that it just wouldn't, there's no way it would do that. But I, you know, I'm not up on all the chatbots out there. There might be some that are, you know, some Nazi chatbots who,
yeah, like you said, the 4chan one, dude, I'm certain that there fucking is, like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's no fucking way that, like, all these advances in AI, they've all done them going, let's be nice. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, there was an early example of AI an early example of this ChatGPT type of thing. I mean, this was like 8 or 9+ years ago now, I feel like, where it's like, it was like an early AI model and they didn't consider any of that. Like, they just didn't factor that in, like, the whole, like, let's be nice about things or whatever. It just wasn't a part of it. And it was, a learning model that was designed to, like, just like ChatGPT works, as I understand it, it was supposed to use, like, social media, message boards or Twitter or something like that to learn and adapt and, mm-hmm. you know, and develop a language model or whatever, which is what ChatGPT does, but with the whole internet, I believe. Right. But this was an earlier version of it. And it was just using like social media and plugged it in, started from there. Like, okay, let's see where it goes. And then within 36 hours, they had to shut it down because it had already started ranting about how Jews control the weather and fucking white replacement theory and all this stuff. Like, within 2 days, it was a full blown Nazi because, you know, that's how the internet be.
It's true.
The internet will radicalize even like half intelligent chatbots, but what are you gonna do?
So anyway, sorry, I just thought I had to mention that because we won't have another chance.
I reckon also past couple of days somebody tried to kill Obama, but I don't he got caught way before he got to any kind of like, but didn't also this dude with the crossbow, wait a minute, hold on,
is the same guy?
No, but what, a chatbot told him to kill the queen?
Yeah.
So this was months ago.
It's just now coming out, but it was back in December. It was back in December when it happened around Christmas. And by the way, I had the article and I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to have this. I've got the fucking notes here. And I immediately hit my article limit. And so that's why I cut myself off really quickly.
Well,
but yeah, no, it happened back at Christmas, but it's just now coming out. Like, I think he's being tried now for treason. Okay.
No, different guy, obviously. But he loaded his truck up with guns and ammo like you do and went to go murder former President Obama. Only in this case, it wasn't a chatbot who told him to do it. It was former President Trump who told him to do it. So, a little different.
What's the point of killing him now?
And I don't mean Trump's voice in his head. I mean, apparently Trump Truth Social to put in something. He, like, doxed Obama, I guess. He, like, put out Obama's address, like, his, like, personal home address. And this guy took that as, like, being given a mission and he drove to the address but got caught or whatever. So anyway, what a time to be alive. So the thing I was going to circle back to was art. We were talking about goofy art a few episodes ago. Well, I ran into some more kind of examples of that, except this is like a little bit different, but it's more modern. Yoko Ono.
Dude.
By
the way, going back to our other point, anything I say about Yoko Ono does not mean that it's all Asian people I feel about this.
Or
you know
women.
What I mean?
Or Asian
or
women.
Or Asian women. Or people that broke up with
Beatles. She can't drive for shit. No.
Guarantee she can't.
Anyway. In 1969, Yoko Ono made a 42-minute experimental film called Self-Portrait, which premiered at the Institute of Contemporary Arts in London. All right. Now, it was called Self-Portrait, but I assume that was a case of dramatic irony, because the film Self-Portrait consisted of one 42-minute single shot of John Lennon's semi-erect penis.
I hate her. She got him to say the N-word, too, like 2 months after the Beatles broke up. She did that.
Are you talking about the song?
Woman is the N-word of the world.
Of the world, yeah.
He wouldn't have done that unless she said that to him a million times in her screeching ghoul voice.
Did he not ever slap her around? I'm not saying that you should slap any of them around. But, like, she seemed to have full control. Yeah, right. He was a wife beater. Everybody, you know, it's like it's a perfect example of, like,
a Mark fact.
Former guest host Mark Agee, a Mark fact. You bring up somebody who generally hits for you, and Mark will tell you why that person is a monster and undeserving of your respect or affection. The preeminent example of that is somebody having, you know, you bring up John Lennon. They're like, you know, he beat his wife, right?
Yeah.
We all know by this point. But my point is, like, so he did. He was a shitty dad, all that stuff. I mean, whatever. But, like, he never kept Yoko in line at all. It worked in reverse. It worked in reverse when it came to her. I don't get that. Like,
maybe
a guy who operated his life like that let her, like, destroy the Beatles. That's wild.
Dude, she might know karate. Like, maybe she hit back. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, but not for real. Like, that might have been his thing. Like, he hit her and she fucking screamed at him and hit him back, and that was their thing. Like, maybe they were like a BDSM thing, so it was a way for him to, like, get his wife beating antics put into something that, like, worked. You know, but yeah, dude, if he was ever going to slap anyone, Jesus Christ. Again, right. You shouldn't, but.
No, but yeah. If
that's your thing.
But if you're gonna.
Yeah, right.
Do you want to know how Self-Portrait ended?
With him coming on the camera?
At the end of Self-Portrait, a single drop of semen comes out of Lennon's penis. He would state in an interview that was accidental.
Okay, and I was about to say, because, like, that's hard to do if you're, like, just to get a single drop.
Well, not to get too graphic with it, but I feel like if you keep a semi-boner, if you keep one of those for nearly an hour, at some point, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Pre-cum, as they call it.
You know what's really wild? That John Lennon is one of the most famous musicians to ever live. Like, he's probably on the Mount Rushmore of the most famous single musicians that have ever lived. And there's a goddamn 42-minute movie of his dick, and then he comes, and I don't know about that. That's wild.
Right. So, the idea beyond just that, the idea was to show the film to the audience members at an art gallery, right? And to then record with another camera, record their reaction to watching it, and then put those things, like, side by side for, like, the finished product. A reaction video. Yeah, which is wild, right?
That is kind wild.
Yeah, though, dude, hang on, finishing that real quick. That didn't work out because they failed to record the actual audience. Like, their gear failed, and they didn't get any footage of the audience watching, or at least that's what they said. They might not have been happy with it because everybody might have just been sitting there like,
ugh.
What the fuck is, what is this?
That's, you know, what it is, dude.
Yeah, but
there's no way that with all the money that they had, the gear failed. Not true.
So, but anyway, reaction videos, brief aside, where you at on those?
Well, here's the deal. One of our sponsors, BetterHelp, helped me with this, but I'm getting a lot better with not getting angry about shit that I don't understand anymore. And, like, I just look at all forms of media that maybe I think they're stupid and just go, well, Corey, that's not for you. Because here's the thing, they're wildly popular. However, the only time I've ever, like, gone out of my way to willingly watch a reaction video was that black dude watching Freebird. And
yeah,
it's the best and it's the best goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, I know that they're not all that good.
No.
But, like, I don't get them. I don't understand. They make no sense. I don't understand how they get away with it on YouTube, because we get flagged for fucking, like, they'll watch a whole thing on YouTube and it's fine. And like, we put up one little clip and it's like, we're arguably reacting to that too. And we can't, so I don't fucking get any of it. I don't understand people. Like, there's clearly people who, like, their favorite thing is to watch reaction videos. I don't get it. But at the same time, you know, I didn't get Les Miserables, you know, I don't know. I mean, I did, I'm just kidding, but you get it.
Yeah, if the person, if it's like an actual reaction and they are funny, like yeah. You said, like No Life Shack, like where their reaction
making
is
it funny. It's a performance.
Is it performance in itself? Then I can get on board with that. But dude, 90% of the react, I see so many that are like
just them sitting there,
just literally a person just sitting there, sitting there watching a thing. And it's like calling it a reaction video is ironic or something, because it's like this is the absence of a reaction. What is the point? Like, and sometimes the video that's coupled with that is like, sometimes it hits, it's funny or whatever. And then that makes me even madder, because I'm like, we don't need you just sitting there, you know?
Can I get sad for a second?
What?
What if they're so popular because some people, it makes them feel like they're watching a video with another person?
Yeah, that's
because a lot of the internet is sad.
Probably
people.
Part of it.
You know
that's
what
probably
I mean?
Part of it, and that super don't hit. So the other thing I want to get into. No, that's all right. I want to get into Coco Chanel after this. But in keeping with that same theme, I found another example of that. It's from the same era. This time, the perpetrator is Andy Warhol, right?
What? Yeah, that guy. Did he beat his wife?
I don't
or
know. Was
boyfriend?
He gay?
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know if he was gay or not. I know strikingly little about Andy Warhol, really. I need to read up on him.
There's like a certain classification of celebrity who I look at as not gay or not straight, but what tier I put them in is they're the type of people that's like a hole's a hole. And like Andy Warhol, Steven Tyler, that's the only two I can think of off the top of my head, but Andy Warhol strikes me as a hole's a hole type of person. And by the way, I don't even mean bisexual. I mean, like, he don't even think of it as man. I'm putting all this on dead Andy Warhol, but like, he just seems like one of those people that's so eccentric that what anything goes, you know.
Speaking of which, so he had this dude, he made experimental films and stuff too, and they often starred this frequent collaborator of his named Taylor Mead, right?
Yeah, I know Taylor Mead.
Are you serious?
From this, I know the name from this. Because okay. Andy, I've been wanting to do an Andy Warhol episode just because of how many times he comes up in some of the other people, you know, and I know who Taylor Mead is.
Okay. So Taylor Mead was like one of Andy Warhol's, you know, dudes who showed up in his shit a lot and whatnot. And I guess a lot of people, they didn't like Taylor Mead.
He was like his Cato Kaelin.
Right. And a lot of people were like, that dude don't hit. Right. Yeah. Like, and inspired a bit of a backlash. So in response to that backlash, in 1964, Andy Warhol produced, shot, and directed the film entitled Taylor Mead's Ass.
yeah, this is how I know it. Yeah, which, this is how I know it.
Which was a 60-minute opus consisting entirely of, you guessed it, Taylor Mead's ass.
Yep.
During the first part of which, Mead exhibits a variety of movements, then, for the latter half of the film, appears, and I don't know what appears means in this context, to shove a variety of objects up his ass.
Yes. Yeah.
So, there you go.
That's better than John Lennon's. He just sat there.
Right, yeah. It's funny, because this says 76 serio comic minutes of the poet/actor's buttocks absorbing light, attention, and debris.
Yep, debris.
Taking debris
that's
up
different,
the butt.
That's different than objects, by the way. Debris?
Yeah.
Debris, to me, means there were sharp loose things going into his butt that may have hurt. Like, debris is sharp and loose.
So
am I wrong?
I don't know. No, you're not. I don't. This dude. Okay. They had to have, like, somehow faked him putting these things up his butt. If I'm reading this stuff right. Okay. So it says the satirical devices of exaggeration and incongruity are represented by the objects mm-hmm. that give characteristics such as simile, symbolism, hyperbole, imagery, and foreshadowing to the film's pop culture iconography in the form of a photo of Lady Bird Johnson.
That don't hit.
Another of Tippi Hedren and Rod Taylor and the Birds. Another of Liz Taylor and Richard Burton. The Beatles on the cover of Life magazine. Hemingway's Movable Feast. Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. A gay porn magazine entitled Big.
There it is.
Flowers, a vacuum cleaner hose, a Scott toilet tissue wrapper, which creates an avant-garde social commentary, historic time capsule, and psychosexual drama. So there you have it. It's funny because I've talked on stage quite a bit and still bring it up every now and then. I've talked in podcasts and stuff about how, like, people talking about how Idiocracy is a documentary or whatever.
I hate those people.
Right. Me too. And I've always said that's total bullshit and whatnot. And just on that note, remember in Idiocracy, the number one movie in the country when he first pops back up in the future is it's 2 hours of an ass farting.
I mean, hey, listen, I'd watch it. Mr. Butt.
Yeah, right. And yeah,
God, that movie rules.
Mr. Butt's magnum opus. That movie does absolutely rule. But anyway, I'm saying, like, you know, Andy Warhol beat Idiocracy to that by fucking 60 years or whatever. To be completely fair about the context, I'll say this, and you can respond as you would, and then we'll move on. But to be completely fair to Andy Warhol, this was directly inspired by a shitty critique or review. Actually, it was a letter to the editors of the Village Voice. So somebody just wrote in and the Village Voice printed it. And in their letter, they said, among other things, quote, "I have tolerated his praise of films shot without cameras, films shot without lenses, films shot without film, films shot out of focus, films focusing on Taylor Mead's ass for 2 hours, etc. But the August 13 column in praise of Andy Warhol was a bit too much." So it's this dude who wrote in bitching about experimental film, basically. And Mead and Warhol were like, "Just so you know, we've not actually made a 2-hour film of Taylor Mead's ass, but we're gonna rectify that with the unlimited resources at our command, love and kisses." So it was their response to that guy who was, like, ripping on them for being the way they are.
First off, they rectum-fied it, huh? How about that? Secondly, that context means everything.
I agree.
I didn't know that. Yeah, dude, that makes it so fucking different. Yeah. And I didn't read that part, but that was just a fuck you. That's amazing and way different because it makes you know that he didn't think in his mind, this is art.
This is,
you know,
brilliant.
What I mean?
Yeah, right.
But I'm glad that you said that.
It was a troll, basically.
And, yes. And in your words, you use the word avant-garde. That's how I found out about Taylor Mead, because I haven't done it yet, but I'm saying it now so that I will, it's on record. I want to do a Professor Cho about avant-garde films, and when researching that and putting some notes together, Taylor Mead's ass came up, and I thought Taylor Mead was a lady's name, and so I was pretty excited, but no. So
yeah.
Anyways,
Coco Chanel. So
expect that episode soon. And as soon as I go
Cho,
pee,
Cho,
won't
you tell us about Coco Chanel? Cho, won't you tell?
Yes.
About Cho, won't Coco. You tell about Coco Chanel? This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, listen, sometimes in life we're faced with tough choices and the path forward isn't always clear. I know that us in the wacky world of show business can be somewhat out of touch with the general human experience. Everybody knows that. But when it comes to uncertainty, inconsistency, instability, things of that nature, believe me, we understand. It's also not something I thrive on. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm kind of a creature of routine, frankly. I'm sort of wired that way. I operate better as a person when I'm on a routine, and the career that I have chosen for myself kind of necessarily prevents that, and there's not much to be done about it. So I'm constantly grappling with instability and uncertainty, not sure how to approach things. Being your own boss is great, but that means you're the one that's in charge, you're the one that's responsible, and you're the one who has to make all the decisions. So you can be paralyzed by these choices. Any human being can, whether you're dealing with decisions around your career, relationships, or anything else. Therapy helps you stay connected to what you really want while you navigate life so you can move forward with confidence and excitement. Trusting yourself to make decisions that align with your values is like anything. The more you practice it, the easier it gets. Cho, you're a big therapy devotee.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I suffer from the same career problems that Trey does. Being your own boss, a lot of pressure. Also, just had a kid. Everything seems like it's like piling on at times. And I've really, really leaned into therapy. I started 2 years ago, and I attribute, you know, much of the happiness and success in my career to just getting to a better place mentally, where I was able to focus more and I wasn't getting weighed down by the little things. Sincerely, I dealt with it for a long time, and coming where I'm from, sounding like I sound, it's very much in the culture to just suck it up. But sometimes you can't, and there ain't nothing wrong with working on yourself. Your brain is an organ just like your other organs, and you'd go in, you know, to get your liver fixed. So do it with your brain, with BetterHelp. Like I said, if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, because you can do it all online. We all hate going places. The pandemic made us realize how much we hate going places. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no charge. So let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/POA today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/POA. BetterHelp.com/POA. Do it. Your brain will thank you.
All right, it's time. He's got his drink. He's got his diaper. He's ready to rock. He's ready to educate everybody.
That's
Professor
right.
Cho. What professor worth his salt doesn't have a beer and a diaper whenever he begins his lesson? That's what I say. This particular lesson of history, Professor Cho, is on the subject of renowned fancy bitch and Jew hater Coco Chanel. Yeah,
that's it. That is it. And that's honestly the two biggest takeaways from all this. Chanel, Coco Chanel, by the way, I'm not going to lie. For a long period of my life, I thought for some reason that Zsa Zsa Gabor and Coco Chanel were the same person. Like even though I know Zsa Zsa Gabor and Ava Gabor are these things, every time I heard Coco Chanel, I pictured Zsa Zsa Gabor. Does that make sense or is that stupid? Also, have I talked about Zsa Zsa Gabor on here?
Yes. Yes, we talked about Zsa Zsa. They're definitely in the same, like, general ballpark, for sure.
All right. Well, Coco Chanel is obviously now, like, you don't have
actually,
to know.
No, they're not. Holy shit. I just Googled Coco Chanel, and I'm sorry. I'm actually, so, I mean, yeah.
Dude,
you're making
she looks way
sense.
Different, right?
That's, yeah, she, yeah.
But you would have thought.
I was like, oh, they're in the same ballpark, so I get it. But having actually Googled Coco Chanel and seeing what she looks, she doesn't look anything at all like what I thought she looked
like. That's what I'm saying, but isn't Zsa Zsa Gabor what you think Coco Chanel
would
look like?
What Zsa Zsa Gabor looked like, especially as she got older, is that absolutely what I thought Coco Chanel looked like.
That's basically,
I don't mean her face. I mean like her whole
vibe.
Her whole thing.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
That's what I mean. And I was like, this is the, like doing research for this is the only first time I've ever seen Coco Chanel's like face. I just had always put Zsa Zsa Gabor there because she doesn't, you know, look like that. Coco Chanel, obviously, nowadays, even if you don't know Coco, you know Chanel. I mean, Chanel is the Air Jordans of the fancy bitch world. You know what I mean? It's just something that, like I said, there's, you know, there's probably some kids that know more about the sneakers than they know about Jordan. And Chanel is the same thing. Like, it's an iconic brand. You think of handbags, you think of dresses, And I wanted to ask you a question, Trey, because you've been in the handbag buying game, right? You've been in the handbag buying game. Yeah. Well,
barely,
I was just wondering,
briefly, and with little success.
What do you mean by that?
Oh man, I'm an absolutely terrible gift buyer and gift giver. Evidently,
I don't think you are.
I know. I think maybe it's just for women. Like, yeah.
I'm a woman.
It's funny. I can buy dudes gifts generally. But like Katie, first of all, Katie's super hard to buy for because like Katie's like, that's my wife. If any of y'all don't know, she's like, she just gets what she wants. Like, she don't have, like, crazy expensive taste, so she's not, like, going and blowing our money on Rodeo Drive or nothing like that. But, like, if she wants a fucking new pair of Lululemon pants or whatever, like, she just gets it, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's just always been that way. So, like, she has everything she wants. She thinks a lot of things are useless or dumb or whatever. It's like, I never know what to get her, ever. She won't tell me anything. In reverse, by the way, I'll tell her literally exactly what I want. And she'll just ignore it and get me some random bullshit instead. Not always. She listens to the show, so I'm sorry.
I know.
Honey.
That's why I wanted to do this.
You give me, like, you have gotten me some wonderful gifts, but also, you have ignored me on multiple occasions before. And I feel like last year I resorted to, she mentioned at some point she wanted a dainty necklace, so I left, like, a six-month reminder in my phone.
Yeah.
Like, I went in my calendar and went six months ahead of time to, like, 2 weeks before her birthday or Christmas or whatever, and it was, like, buy Katie a dainty necklace. So, like, when it popped up, I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Who wrote that? Present me didn't even remember past me writing it, right? Well, anyway, also, for a lot of our relationship, I was, fucking poor white trash to the core when we
still
met.
Are, but used to be too.
Yeah, right. But I had no money at all. Then, we got married. She was knocked up pretty quickly, all that. It was like, I had a good job with the DOE, but we had two babies and diapers, it's like, I was no longer white trash by that point, obviously. Fucking, 25 years old with two kids and diapers and fucking, still driving hand-me-down vehicles and that type of stuff. Still living paycheck to paycheck, all that shit. Never had any like money at all. And then so early on in having some money, I was like, oh, I know, like, I'll buy her some of that, like, shit that, fancy bitches wear or like, or whatever, like, Chanel, Louis Vuitton designer stuff, that type of thing. Cause she does like clothes and bags and jewelry and all that chick shit, right? So I was like, that's what I'll do. She especially likes, like, she needed a purse at the time, so I just went into Gucci, right?
Of course.
An actual Gucci store out here in Los Angeles, with
on Rodeo Drive.
Married there one day. I don't remember. No,
you would remember if it was Rodeo.
I think it was
Drive.
In Glendale. I don't, Beverly Hills don't hit for me. I don't like going down
of
there,
course.
But anyway. And so I went in there and looked around and they had basically two different kinds of bags. They had like plain ish, like black, but they were Gucci bags. And then they had bags you could tell was Gucci, right?
Yeah.
They had a floral print and were like, that's a Gucci bag, right? So I was like, okay, well, obviously I'm going to get that one. Like, I was like, I'm not going to spend the amount of money that it takes to spend on these Gucci bags and have some bag that might not be a Gucci bag from afar. You
of
know
course.
What I mean? Like, that defeats the purpose. I don't understand why anybody would do that, right? Because I'm trash and don't know stuff and have no class or taste or anything. So I just went with the...
You don't hit.
The more overtly Gucci-ish one,
right?
And was so excited. I was like, this is a home run, dude. This would be... And did not hit for her. She lasted about 30 seconds pretending that it did before she had to be like, yeah, I'm not. Can I take this back? And I was like, just absolutely furious. I was like, why? What the fuck? She said it was too gaudy, too flashy for her, that she wasn't like that. She was like, then she started saying, like, you don't have stuff. You don't like gaudy stuff either. And I was like, yeah, well, no, but that ain't the point. Like, I don't want to floss, but like you need to be flossing.
Yes.
Right? You know
so
what I'm
that
saying?
People like, know, oh, he, yeah. Yeah, because we all want, in the South, we want our woman to be blinged out. Because
yes, right.
We know that when someone sees a woman blinged out, they first they thing know, is they go, the,
yeah, right.
Her husband has.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's exactly right.
I know. I do the same shit with Amber.
Yes, that's 100% correct. It's like, no, I have some humility, all right?
Right.
Some, you know, like I don't need to have attention drawn on myself, but right. You... I need to use you to make sure that people know that I hit. Yeah.
Yes.
But she wasn't down with that. So she returned it and then got like a middle of the road purse that was, you'll never believe this, pretty much just black. Black, couldn't yep. tell what it was. It's like, what is it? It's like in between, like just a purse you get at Target and a Gucci bag.
Dooney and Burke?
No.
Coach?
No.
Louis Vuitton?
It's some woman's name. Tara Birch.
Oh, Tori Birch. Tori Birch. That's my
yeah.
mom's favorite. She wears Tori Birch shoes.
Tori Birch purse. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Trey, the reason that she didn't like it is because you ignored Coco Chanel's entire creed, in which it is simplicity is the keynote of all true elegance. Right. A couple more quotes that I'd like to read you from Coco Chanel, just so we can get to know her a little bit. And I would also like your reaction to these quotes. Fashion fades, only style remains the same. How's that strike you?
I legitimately have no idea how to interpret that.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of hers that are like that. That's what
okay.
I was hoping.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Now, this one is, I kind of agree with, in order to be irreplaceable, one must always be different. I think that's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's vacillating wildly between like cryptic and indecipherable and like seemingly obvious to me. Yeah. That's how I'm feeling about these so far.
Now, this one's pretty good. Dress shabbily and they remember the dress. Dress impeccably. And they remember the woman.
I like that one.
I do
that
too.
That's
and it's
a good
very
one.
True.
It's very
it's
true.
It's very true. Like me normally.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I feel like they also remember the fucking trashy piece of shit that came in sweatpants
but
or whatever
that morning.
But
they only talk about the outfit. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, but if you come back in later, if it was you and you come back through later, they're going to be like, there's that fucking trash bag who was wearing sweatpants earlier or whatever and didn't hit for me. I think. It is a good quote, though.
Yeah. Okay. Now here's another one that I think falls into that first category that you were lumping them in. Nature gives you the face you have at 20. Life shapes the face you have at 30. But at 50, you get the face you deserve.
Probably. She probably means like if you don't take care of your face and shit. You're going to be haggish, right? Which is what you deserve for not putting the time in to have a hidden face.
Yeah,
over the course of your youth.
Yeah, if you haven't worn sunscreen, then by 50, you deserve that. Here's one that I think Katie would agree with. As long as you know men are like children, you know everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with it.
Elegance is not the prerogative of those who have just escaped from adolescence, but of those who have already taken possession of their future.
Okay, do that one more time.
Elegance is not the prerogative of those who have just escaped from adolescence, but of those who have already taken possession of their future.
Yeah, okay, I get that.
I'm with you. Now, here's my favorite one. A woman who doesn't wear perfume has no future.
Yep, short and to the point.
Yeah, right. Gabrielle Bonhoeffer.
Nobody going to hire your stinky ass.
Gabrielle
Also, back then, like, she could have left out the whole who doesn't wear perfume part, right? Am I wrong?
A woman,
she, This was still a time when women, generally speaking, did not have a future, right?
That's true. She's born in 1883. She's born Gabrielle Bonheur Chanel, later known as Coco, of course. She was the second daughter of Albert Chanel and Jeanne Deville. So her dad was a street vendor and her mama was a laundry woman in the 1800s, right? So if you can guess, they are not even a little bit financially well off. They're very poor. And that's one thing that I would like to point out here is because there's a lot of Coco Chanel types out there who the reason that they were able to be successful is because they didn't have to worry about anything. Like they were like look, Kylie Jenner, for instance, she's a fashion mogul now. Well, duh. She fucking never had to do anything else except for go, I like lipstick. Let's put my name on lipstick. And I only bring this up because people constantly talk about how they're like, no, I mean, yeah, the Jenners have a lot of money, but Kylie's a self-made woman because, you know, right. She did her own thing. And it's like, right, I'm not saying that that's not cool to be an entrepreneur, but Coco was legit fucking born in poverty. There's a story that I heard, I think it was on Behind the Bastards, and I want to give that shout out. If you're not listening to Behind the Bastards, you should still listen to our show, but Behind the Bastards is great. That this is when Coco was born. Her mom was on a train and she suddenly like goes into labor, and she doesn't say that to anybody. She just looks really sick and she's distressed. So this couple like takes her and they're like, oh my god, we got to get you help. So they take her to her house, and then they get a doctor over there because they're like, she's really sick. And by the way, Coco's mom didn't know she was in labor. So they're like, she's really sick. And then the doctor gets over there and they're like, oh my God, she's not sick. She's in labor. And the family immediately was like, get this whore out of here. Because like being sick, they were like so compassionate. But when they found out that she was just having a kid, they were like, this ain't it. Right. So anyways, her mom ends up dying and she's left with her dad at 12 years old. But her dad was like, you know what? Being a single father, that ain't it. So he gives them to a fucking orphanage. She ends up growing up in a Catholic orphanage. At 18, she leaves the orphanage and started working as a seamstress creating hats and other garments. So she's starting to sew. She's sort of like getting the hang of it and is like, okay, this might be something that can pull me out. In her early 20s, she takes to the stage, my friend. She began performing as a cabaret singer in various clubs and cafes. This is where she gets the nickname Coco. A lot of people thought, oh, that's because she used to sing this song that had the word Coco in it. But she insists that people called her that because it's short for coquette, which in French means a kept woman. You know that? You know that one?
Coquettish. I thought that... No, I didn't. I just now, you have informed me that that's a word I've been wrong about my whole life. I thought that...
I could be wrong.
Obviously not. You've got a source. I didn't know it meant kept woman. I thought that coquettish meant like, what am I trying to say? Like foxy and alluring?
Okay, but here's the thing. Not be wrong, this is what she says about herself, and the more I read, the more people are saying, like, you really can't believe a goddamn word that she says. Because, like, if you go through several interviews with her, she will tell four different versions of how she was brought up, like wildly different. And a lot of people like noticed that like she was taking her life story from plot lines in novels. Like, so part of me is thinking like, well, there's this girl that grew up poor and she had a shitty life.
So according to, you know, dictionary.com or whatever, coquettish means behaving in such a way as to suggest a playful sexual attraction, flirtatious. So I was right about that.
You are.
But the literal translation of coquette is kept woman. Okay. I did not know that. So
okay, anyways, cool. So we were both right. I love that. That never works out. But she used to just make a lot of shit up, which like you got to imagine, like, well, she came from like she's in a Catholic fucking orphanage. Like when people would ask her about her life, she didn't want to say that. So she just started saying wild shit. Like I empathize with her in that. And there's a lot of things in her early life that you empathize with until you find out the whole like she was a Nazi thing. This is what's crazy is that. So she decides like. around her time when she starts making dresses, this is during the period when women were all wearing those like 13 layer corsets, and they had like that, you know, that like exoskeleton they had under it.
Yeah.
To like make their butts look big. Mm-hmm. Well, Coco was like, this is fucking stupid.
So stupid.
Because one of her quotes, let me go up here and read this that I forgot. One of her quotes was, luxury must be comfortable, otherwise it's not luxury. And I fucking agree with that so much. You know what I mean? I hit, therefore I should wear sweatpants.
Also, like, why do women need to look like a lampshade?
It makes no sense. It makes no fucking sense. So she decides that women would rather be comfortable. And of course, she's correct. And what's wild is this. So Coco Chanel apparently dressed very masculine, and like that, and a lot of her early designs were like basically putting women in man's clothes. And, you know, that's not even good now. like you get shit on for that now. And this is the fucking 20s, or this is the 10s. So that was her deal. Her designs were all based on clothes that she saw poor people wearing, because poor people didn't have these standards to live up to. Poor people just dressed functional and comfortable. So Coco was like, that's what we're going to do. And I say all that to say this: rich people co-opting Carhartt is not a new thing. That has been going on forever. All of these ideas were because poor people are functionality only. And they like, we like, poor people wear shit that is comfortable because they're like, well, I mean, it's not like anybody's going to look at me otherwise.
Here's what I'm not following, or here's what's not tracking for me about this, is I feel like, now you said the teens, I mean, that's a long ass time ago, but I feel like every picture I have ever seen of like a city street from like the 20s, 30s, 40s, every motherfucker out there is in a goddamn three-piece suit with an overcoat and a nice hat and all that. I know, but I'm saying like,
because there was no man doing
casual or
but the women
comfortable seeming or any of that. Like it wasn't sweatpants.
But no. But the women was different
either. But
that's because the men didn't have a Coco Chanel, Trey. That's because the men didn't have a Coco Chanel. Somebody made this point in a documentary that I watched that was like, look at Downton Abbey. The first couple seasons, they're all wearing this fucking real complicated shit. And then when they get a little bit older, all of a sudden they're wearing just these plain satin dresses. That is Coco Chanel's influence on the fucking world, because she took it by storm. But there was not that for men. Men still had to dress to the nines. You know what I'm saying? And I would say a lot of that is because women weren't in business. You know what I mean? Women weren't in business. Men, like, they couldn't get away with that shit because men had to, like, if you're going to buy a railroad, you better not do it in some fucking pajamas.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So she started using, you would think, you're like, oh, the reason the Chanel stuff costs so much is because it's made out of really expensive fabrics. Actually, not. She started out, and it's still to this day a thing, she used what's called jersey fabric. And jersey, it's a knit fabric used predominantly for clothing manufacture, made of wool, cotton, and synthetic, right? Or it's now with synthetic. But it was used exclusively to make men's underwear. So she's making her dresses and shit out of what they use to make men's underwear, because it was fucking cheap. And she's like, I'll make this shit for cheap. Why it will sell is because it's comfortable, right? And I can fucking put any price tag on it because I'm the only bitch out here doing it. She also, her signature dress, as we know, if you ever hear anybody say the little black dress, you know that's a thing, right? That's her. That's her. Her whole thing was like, it's that thing with not being complicated. It's like, it's a black dress. It's little. And here's the deal. She was right in so much of that stuff about how like elegance never goes out of style, but fashion does. She made something that to this day, if you take my mom has a little black dress.
It's timeless.
Dress.
Right.
It's timeless. My mom has a little black dress.
It's never going to not work.
Right. And it's the same as the one from the 20s. Like it's never going to not fucking work. It was obviously made very famous because Audrey Hepburn wore the Chanel one in Breakfast at Tiffany's. One of her biggest lasting legacies, though, is not fashion. It is instead her perfume, Chanel No. 5.
I thought it was nine. Is there a nine?
There is a nine now. I'm pretty sure. And I think that's a men's. My favorite cologne of all time is Chanel Allure. Nothing smells better on earth than Chanel Allure. But number five, and by the way, it's called so because designer Ernest Beau, he brought her samples label. Like, she's like, I want to do this shit. I want to make a fragrance that apparently at this time, women they had single note fragrances, which was like, you smell like vanilla, you have vanilla oil, or you have peppermint oil. And she was like, no, this is the time when she goes, things need to be complicated, right?
That's what I was about to say. It's wild. Both of these things are wild to me because it's like, I'm not taking anything away from her. She almost had to feel like this is, I don't know how to put what I'm trying to say, but I think it's super interesting and wild. She basically, because of the time she was at, like, she was the first person to go, like, hey, we don't need to be wearing fucking fishbone corsets or whatever. We can just wear a regular dress. And it's like, that was a revolutionary idea at the time.
Super
when it's like, it just seems like, you know, a natural, you know, like obvious. It seems obvious. Yeah. Same thing, but in reverse with perfumes. Like, perfumes are like, this vanilla, this rose, this strawberry, get the fuck out or whatever. And for her to be the first person who's like, well, why don't we make like a bouquet of scents that hit, you know, it's like, that seems obvious, right?
But I agree. It's obvious now because of Chanel.
Like she had to feel like this shit is easy.
I agree.
Because like, it's like, I know it wouldn't seem obvious if to this day no one had done it. If she hadn't done it and still hadn't been done, it wouldn't feel obvious. But it's just, I don't know. It's kind of wild.
I agree with you, but it always does take one person. And
no, it
she
is.
Was
you're
that.
Right. And that's how kind of revolutionary sort of thinker, whatever is, unless you're talking about in like physics or high science or mathematics or something.
Ben Franklin inventing the bifocals is a little more complicated than what she did.
Right.
Probably.
Yes. But a lot of times it is a thing where it's like,
it's as obvious.
I can't believe somebody didn't think about that before. Yeah.
The thing is that
before that person did.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the difference though, Trey. A lot of people had thought about it, but they didn't do shit about it. You know what I mean? I think that's a lot of those times where it's like, you know, it's just, there's somebody's like, I'm willing to actually do it instead of sit around and talk about how it would hit if this. Like, there's doers and there's fucking complainers, right? And it's really depressing because, like, dude, she's such a fucking impressive person. Like, if only she had not hated the Jews. Like, she really is a feminist icon.
I had no idea she was new money at all. Like,
completely poor.
I would
like,
have
she's
bet
so impressive.
A lot of money that she was the wealthy daughter of some landed gentry French motherfucker, like a baron. I would have thought
she was a
baroness or something.
Now,
so I got to give it up to all.
Me too. Me
like,
too, dude. Now,
it's all very, very impressive. So please tell me about the Jews.
Now, okay, I was about to say the Jew hating stuff actually does come about because, in my opinion, she started hanging out with those types. Because around this time, she meets. I didn't say that Chanel number five was called. Did I tell you why it was called number five?
Was it the fifth iteration?
Ernest Beau brought her a bunch of samples. And he had his samples listed 1 through 5 and 20 through 24, and she liked 5 the most. And so she was like, let's do Chanel number 5. And he's like, but there hasn't been a number 1. And she goes, it's simple. I like simplicity.
Yeah.
Chanel number 5. That's the fucking name. So around this time, she's blowing up, right? She's got her perfume. It's the number one selling perfume until, I mean, I don't know, maybe fucking White Diamonds is the first person to ever take it over. It was like the number one forever. Around this time, she meets a British socialite named Vera Bate Lombardi, and that she had a ton of high society friends. We're talking dukes, princes, blah, blah, blah. She got Coco into sporting, hunting foxes, polo, yada, yada, all that stuff. This had a huge influence on her later fashion, which was like sporting fashion. She already wanted people to be comfortable, but she's like, okay, and these people that are going and hunting foxes, I need to make something that's elegant, but also comfortable for them. So they're not just sitting there fucking tight ass in these gold button red jackets and shit like that. So then she starts working as an undercover agent in World War II for the Nazis. Her code name was Westminster. She had a relationship with this guy named, and tell me this guy ain't a Nazi, Hans Gunther von Dinklage. That's a Nazi motherfucker. They lived together for
Hans
a period.
Hans Gunther von Dinklage?
That motherfucker hated the Jews.
Hated the Jews.
Professionally.
That's what he do.
We know plenty of people around our neck of the woods that hate Jews, but not get a paycheck for hating the Jews. You know what I mean? So they lived together for a while in the Ritz Hotel, which the Ritz Hotel at this time, this whole in France, everything's occupied by the Germans. And she gets like a special allowance to stay there. Like, and it should have people should have known, like, hey, Coco's still here. Maybe she's working with the Nazis.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? But they didn't. Nobody thought about that shit. So
weird.
I agree. Her business partner who helped her get Chanel No. 5 off the ground, he was a Jew. He was a Jewish feller named Pierre. So he helps her get it off the ground. But what happens is, and this is what I was talking about earlier when I say, I get why she hates one Jew. He made her sign this big contract, and in the fine print, where he knew that she wasn't going to fucking read it, she only got 10% of the money from Chanel No. 5. And this guy who didn't help with the fragrance, didn't have the Chanel name, he got 90% of it just because he was helping her with this deal. And so, like, he didn't hit for him at all. And so, but anyways, Coco Chanel sees an opportunity.
Was it Jerry Heller? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Maybe a Jerry Heller situation. I'm pretty sure
they don't have.
He's not super fond of,
white people as a whole Jews.
Might be a similar type situation.
Yeah. It's only one.
I don't know. Look, there's been a whole rash of prominent black people publicly not liking Jews lately. I don't know how else to say it. It's just it's a real thing that's happened. It's been a trend.
It's a real thing.
Kanye being that much of a trendsetter, but lots of athletes and rapper. I shouldn't have said Ice Cube, I think, is just I don't think he's like come out and outright said it or whatever. I just feel like he's got
we know he hates one Jew. That's all we're saying.
Right. Yeah.
We know we're not saying he hates all.
I love Ice Cube.
He's the best.
We're both Raiders fans. We have that in common. Man, Ice Cube.
So during the war/Holocaust, Coco Chanel sees an opportunity to get all of her money back because it was illegal for Jews to have businesses. Oh, I should point out, I forgot to say this. The reason that this guy was her business partner was because at the time, women were not allowed to have a bank account.
Right.
So she literally has to have this guy because even though she's a revolutionary, she's not allowed to have a bank account because she's a fucking woman. So she sees this moment of like, holy shit, Jews aren't allowed to have businesses. I can out this fucking guy and get all my money back. But what she didn't know was going to happen was this guy saw this shit coming too, and he had already signed and transferred his business into this white man's name and was using this white dude as a sort of like shell company while he was in hiding from the Nazis so that he was still making all the money. So she is eventually investigated for collaboration with the Nazis, but she's released due to lack of evidence. But a lot of what I think is that Winston Churchill was her buddy. Winston Churchill really liked her because she hunted foxes with him. And I'm thinking that maybe he just sort of like helped her out, you know? Now, when it comes out, though, that she may have been helping the Nazis, her business took a pretty big hit. But not for long, Trey. Not for long. Because a little bit after that, she introduced the Chanel suit. The suit featured a collarless, boxy jacket with contrasting trim paired with a slim-fitting skirt. The design revolutionized women's fashion. This is what we see Hillary Clinton in now. That was that shit. The woman's business suit. Also, she reintroduces her little black dress. And my friend, you can't keep a hitter down. She survived all the Nazi rumors, right? She did eventually settle her dispute with Wertheimer, that guy, for $9 million and regain control of her brand. However, they have the Chanel empire today. Karl Lagerfeld runs it, but they, like, I guess after she died, they picked it back up. That is Coco Chanel, a very complicated woman who I can't lie. I mean, she fucking hit. It's just that she hated the Jews. Hated them, which makes her not hit.
Dude, there was Henry Ford, Walt Disney, her.
Yeah, like, it's a theme.
It was a thing back then.
It's a fucking thing. You want to get to some airmail real quick, Trey?
Yeah.
I selected this one, and I'm glad I did because it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with John Lennon. The subject line, how do you sleep?
Oh, God.
Hey guys, big recent fan here. You both hit very hard, and I've recommended you to several of my Yankee friends. Hearing smart and thoughtful conversations from men with your accent has been refreshing. However, I do have one point of contention. I know art is subjective, but how on earth do you regard Paul as the greatest Beatle? I will admit he may be the best instrumentalist, but that alone is hardly a full accounting. Now, we all love the Beatles, but it is hard to judge each member's contributions to songs created by the collaborative efforts of a group. So we must look at the solo work. Here we arrive at Wings. No one with an ounce of respect would compare Wings to the Beatles. So wherein lies the difference? It is entirely the lack of John and George, both of whom, unlike Paul, went on to make more good music, which leads me to the subject of this email. When John came to his bandmates and said he was thinking of leaving the band, Paul begged him not to go. Then Paul announced through the media that he was leaving the band to start his own group. This rightfully annoyed the other members, so much so that John and George collaborated on a song about Paul called How Do You Sleep? In this song, they state that the only thing Paul ever did was Yesterday, the song Yesterday. Interestingly, after John was murdered, Paul tried to get John's name off of that song as a co-writer, a dick move regardless. I defy you to read the lyrics of any Wings song and say, this is meaningful. It's like he just throws darts at a board covered with random words. Also, simply having a wonderful Christmas time is universally considered not just the worst holiday song, but likely the most annoying song ever composed. And yes, Paul puts on a good live show, but it's because he plays a bunch of fucking Beatles songs everyone loves and is a competent musician surrounded by the best money can buy, while also being a living legend and the avatar of the concept of nostalgia. In conclusion, Something by George Harrison is the best Beatles song, followed by about 10 John and George masterpieces. Sorry this was so long. I love you both. Ben from Philly.
That was a very Philly-ass letter. I felt like really like that. Fuck Paul McCartney. How about that? Fucking just look. Okay. As we kind of alluded to earlier,
I can't follow that. By the way, so that's going to be. We're going to get to the rest of the airmail next week.
Yeah. As we kind of alluded to earlier, I just felt like John Lennon got, you know, a little head up buddy and a little jerk offy and shit.
Also
in
beat
his
wife.
Later years before being struck down, also beat his wife, all that stuff. Now that's not musical in nature, but the first thing is though, like for example, like, you know, imagine it's like any 14, 15 year old hears Imagine and they're like, fucking whoa. Right. But as an adult and after fucking Gal Gadot and the rest of Hollywood sang it to us during COVID and all that shit. It's kind of,
well, and
it's you know,
and
the
also realizing
musical equivalent of the jerk off motion.
Yes, and also realizing that he wrote it on a $50,000 piano, you know.
Right. And George Harrison, George Harrison rules.
George Harrison said number two.
George Harrison, you know, I agree about Something. Something is awesome. As My Guitar Gently Weeps and Watching the Wheels and all that. I got nothing but love
Blackbird
for George,
Paul or George?
For George Harrison. But I don't know if I think. I don't know.
I'll look it up. Keep talking.
I'm looking at a list of songs written by Paul McCartney, and I don't see Blackbird on here, so it must have been one of the other ones. Some of them are classified as a lot of them are classified
Lennon
as
Lennon and McCartney. Yeah,
right.
Which might be a Matt Damon, Ben Affleck situation.
And Blackbird is classified as a Lennon-McCartney song. And that's what I'm saying. It's like when it comes to this guy, my man from Philly, it's like how you don't know the breakdown of how each of those. Like,
by the
for
way,
example,
we
like,
love you.
Like, hey, right. But like, Hey Jude, for example, that's listed as a Lennon-McCartney song. But like, dude, Paul McCartney wrote that song. He
of
had
course.
To. Have. It's about
he wrote it.
Julian
yes.
Lennon. Right. Yeah. Like, it's about John's son. Like,
and there's not many more iconic Beatles song than Hey Jude.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So most of their iconic songs are listed as a collaboration between the two. And who's to say? I'm sure that all of it's been documented which one of them wrote the majority of which song, but I don't have that information. Anyway, I'm
everyone
just saying,
knows
I don't
know why by the way that
also like in Paul McCartney, I mean like the mid 90s, because my dad was a huge McCartney fan and Beatlemaniac. He came out with this album called Flaming Pie, and maybe he did. It was a solo album, and he might have done this on every album he ever made. I don't know. I just remember on that album specifically, Paul McCartney literally played every single instrument that was played on that album in the studio. No session musicians, nothing. Every single instrument on that album, he played it himself. Like,
Paul McCartney
is head to toe legit.
Do you know who's modern day Paul McCartney?
Who?
Dave fucking Grohl. They fit the same bill. They were in an iconic band. That band is not together anymore. The main dude from the band died. They went on to form another band and regularly play every single instrument on the fucking track and still has a fucking career.
Right.
Paul's the best one, 100%. I love
He's also,
Ben.
You know, he's still alive. Him and Ringo, the only one still alive.
He didn't
and
get
I don't think
up.
Anybody would argue Ringo over Paul. As much as I love Ringo, I love them all. But yeah, I mean, you know.
Dude, Paul's number one. Anybody that knows anything about music will tell you that he, among all the Beatles, was the virtuoso of actual music. And how does that not lend itself to being the most important member of the fucking band? All right?
That's for
all
me.
I'm saying. Hey, by the way, you can pre-order our book. The link is in the description of this podcast. Thank you, BPP, for putting that in. It's called Round Here and Over Yonder, a travel guide. Thank you for pre-ordering it in advance and helping us stay number one. Also, go to TreyCrowder.com to see where Trey's going to be because he's touring and shit. Go to PartTimeFunnyMan.com if you want bonus stuff from me. And also, might I add, stay fancy, motherfuckers.
Hold on. Also, I just want to say that I think maybe I'm amazed hits, but you know.
So hard! Dude, and on the run fucking hits.
Yeah,
what does
right.
he mean? What does he mean? And also, simply having a wonderful Christmas time. I understand why some people find that annoying, but to me, it's not Christmas until I hear that fucking song. All right?
Yeah. Anyway, stay fancy, motherfuckers. Love you. Skew.
Do it. Skew.
Final thing, we literally just got finished, and I realized that I had said that Watching the Wheels was a George Harrison song. It's not. It's a John Lennon song. I don't know why I said that. I'm an idiot. Please don't write an airmail about it. I probably got some other stuff wrong. Anyway, thank y'all. Love y'all. See you. Bye. Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.